Welcome to the session. So I have the pleasure of introducing Chow Chow and Mike Sherris, although I gather you're not going to say anything, Mike. Is that right? Excellent. Very good. Is that door going to shut? All right. Before I get into the formal stuff, feedback forms, please. And what I will do is I'll ask someone at the back of the room to volunteer to collect feedback forms. Maybe someone, one of you guys in the back row, maybe. Thank you very much. At the end of the talk, if you can fill those out and hand them in. If you just stand up at the door and stop everyone from getting out until they give you a form, that would be great. And we've got the five-minute bell, you know about that. When you ask questions, please use the microphone. Okay. Chow completed his Bachelor of Commerce degree with first-class honours in actuarial studies as a University of New South Wales actuarial co-op scholar and an accounting double major at the Australian School of Business, University of New South Wales, in 2010. His research has been in the area of managing longevity risk in group self-pooling arrangements and has commenced graduate employment with PwC in Sydney. I think Mike Sherris probably needs no introduction, and it's far too long for me to read anyway. I'm sure it's on the website. So without further ado, I'll turn over to Chow. Thank you.
Thank you. Today I'd like to talk about managing systematic mortality risk, and in particular, I'd like to talk about this particular product or potential product, which is what we call a group self-pooling and annuitisation scheme. So I'd like to first give you an introduction as to the background of what we're doing. Australia has a very developed DC system in place, which is there to protect retirees from running out of money. So retirees would, before they retire, would contribute part of their salary towards this DC. When they're working, currently it's 9%, and then after they retire, hopefully that amount of money is going to fund them in retirement. But the current problem is that there is no longevity solution out there. The traditional longevity solution is an annuity. What we need is something that's viable, something that people can buy, something that people can sell, that can adequately convert the lump sum that you accumulate from your DC scheme into a retirement annuity stream or income stream. Currently, guaranteed life annuities don't offer that role. Currently in Australia, they're not being sold. Well, they are being sold, but the market for it is very small. And so that's the background of what we're doing. The reason why this is important is because increasingly we're seeing the issue of population ageing, and increasingly as people's accumulations get bigger and bigger, as we've introduced DC about 20 years ago, people are going to have bigger and bigger lump sums to retire on. That whole thing becomes a greater and greater issue, because we don't want people to squander their money or run out of money and move on to the age pension, because that destroys the purpose of having a DC scheme in the first place. There are reasons why traditional annuities don't offer that role. There are problems on supply and there are problems on demand. On the demand side, retirees want the freedom to be able to control their money. They demand liquidity. Traditional life annuities don't offer that. They also want the ability to bequest part of their savings onto their kids, onto future generations. If they invest their money into a lifetime guaranteed annuity, it won't allow them to do that. And some people expect a high yield. Currently, the yield is not nice. Well, people don't like what they're getting, so they don't see traditional life annuities as a product that offers value for money. And those are all problems that are contributing to why people don't want to buy it. And then on the other hand, insurance companies don't want to sell it because they have to guarantee this income stream for the rest of the life of the person being insured. And we know that future mortality improvements in human mortality is very unpredictable. And potentially, say if we have a major improvement in human mortality, insurers don't want to carry capital to protect against that risk. So there's a natural incentive for insurers not to insure. And so at the end of the day, we have no product out there. There's no feasible product. So what we're proposing, or some earlier researchers proposed, is an alternative product to protect against longevity, and that's a pooled self-annuity scheme, or a group self-annuity scheme, GSA. And I'll talk about the features of the GSA and why it's good. So the first people to introduce the GSA are Pigott, Valdes and Dessel in 2005. They introduced the pooling mechanism for group self-annuitization schemes such that systematic risk would be borne by the pool, not by the insurance company. So there is no... So the insurance company is merely an administrator carrying expenses for managing the fund, but they don't actually run any systematic mortality risk. So if there's a major hit in terms of mortality improvement that impacts everyone, that's going to be borne by the insurers in the pool themselves. And the benefit of that is that the insurer won't have to carry capital around to protect against that risk in the long term, and therefore there's going to be more of a market for those products. And, you know, people are actually willing, potentially, to offer this product, and there are more people who are willing to buy it. And then Valdes, Pigott and Wang 2006 then established that adverse selection for group self-annuitization schemes does exist, but it exists to a lesser extent than traditional annuities, which means on the adverse selection front, group self-annuitization schemes are a better product as well. And that's a greater incentive for such a product to be marketed. And then Stamos 2008 then established that the portfolio, or how should I say, utility gains gained by a member of the group self-annuitization scheme, the utility gains can be substantial, and they increase with the number of people in the pool. And so how this pool works is that when you retire, hopefully you invest some money into the pool, and then based on the mortality profile or experience of the pool, people get distributed a regular income, say on a yearly basis. And when people die, when members die in the pool, the money or fund value they have contributed that's still remaining at the point of death would then get redistributed to the people who didn't die as a form of mortality credit. And in such a way, you can see that systematic risk is borne by the pool as a whole, because any mortality improvement is going to be shared in the mortality experience and going to be taken into account into the income stream that people receive. But there are issues with the existing arrangement. The major issue is that there is still systematic risk. There is still the uncertainty of not being of mortality improvements. Now it's being borne by members. So what it's going to do is that in the long term, with improving mortality coming through, people's income streams are going to decline over time because of this systematic mortality. And also what you're going to see is that people's incomes are going to be very volatile because as you deviate away from the population mortality, the amount you receive is going to be uncertain, more uncertain, because this is death deviating away from the population. And people don't want uncertainty, because you as a retiree, you want a certain level of income when you retire. And therefore, our objective in this research is to address declining payments, capture systematic mortality, also capturing dependence between ages, which is part of the systematic risk that we're dealing with. And we do this by incorporating a mortality model that captures both dependence and extreme value survival times, because what we're interested in a mortality insurance product is that it's the old ages, so people with extreme ages. We want to solve the problem of old age volatility. We want to solve the problem of declining payments, and how we do that is we can increase the number of people in a pool and therefore large pools. We can pull new cohorts into the pool, so pooling young cohorts with older existing cohorts in the pool and therefore sharing their mortality experience. And we can also recognise the expected future mortality rates and price that into our into the income that people receive. And so what we find in our research is that through pooling a large number of people and through introducing younger cohorts and through preemptively realise future expected mortality improvements, parts of the systematic risk can be protected, which means that people's payments that they receive out of this product over time is going to be stable. So they're not going to decline, and the volatility of their payments are going to reduce. And I'll take you through the details of our research. So firstly, just a bit on the methodology of the fund and how the pooling mechanism actually works. Firstly, you contribute some money into the pool. So F for the fund value, for the IF individual at time T, for the cohort number zero, for a person aged X, is given by the F symbol. So say, for example, you contribute $100 at the start. And then over time, what you're going to receive is your fund value at that particular point in time divided by your future expected life annuity factor. So it's very similar to an annuity. But what you have is you have this mortality credit happening. So for people who died, their remaining capital in the fund is going to be distributed to those people who didn't die. And that's the way we share idiosyncratic risk. And then what happens is your annuity factors each year will get updated, and your p-values, which is your survival probability, will get updated relative to the experience. And that is how we pool systematic risk. So the systematic risk is going to be borne by the pool as a whole. And then your balance or remaining capital for the next year is just your fund balance of the previous year, taking away of what you have already received in the previous year, accumulated with some interest or investment, and you use that balance and weight it in such a way that you receive other people's mortality credit. So at the end of the day, this is the money you have for the next period. And for the next period, again, you divide that fund balance by the present value annuity factor to receive your benefit payment income. And so the whole process just goes from year to year. So as you can see, what's going to happen is that if we have significant systematic risk, as in improving mortality over time, people are going to get paid a lot of money at the up front, and their fund balance will decrease to a large extent earlier, which will then reduce the benefits they receive in future periods. And so that's the major problem that we're trying to address. And then in our research, we also took into account of two aspects of mortality experience. One aspect of mortality experience is deviation from expectation. And the second one is the shift in expectation. So as data or mortality experience comes through, the population expectation might shift from your previous assumption. But then you're, as an insurer yourself, is a pool. Your experienced mortality might deviate away from the population. And those two factors are given by this inverse P for the experience of the pool and the ratio of the present value annuity factors, which represent the change in expectation. And sometimes the two elements might be hard to distinguish from one another. And what we have proposed is to combine them in the same formula framework such that you can express your benefit payment this year as a function of the benefit payment that you received in the previous year. And you can see the impact of mortality improvements coming through. Remember earlier I mentioned that regardless of what you do, there's always going to be systematic risk. Yes, you can have a large pool. Yes, you can pool young cohorts with old cohorts, but you're always going to have this systematic risk, and you're always going to have dependence across ages, and you're always going to have this long-tailed aggregate survival probability, which has a downward skew in the tail. And so over time, regardless of what mechanisms you introduce, you're always going to have declining payments. And how we address this issue is we have proposed an improvement on the way we calculate benefit payments. So instead of using the normal annuity factor, present value annuity factor, we use an improved, updated annuity factor that takes into account of future mortality, expected mortality rates. And that's reflected in the calculation of your probability, your survival probabilities, in that your survival probabilities that you use in calculating the A double dot present factor, present value factor, is an expectation of what you expect future survival probabilities to be. And we found that to be a very useful improvement, and I'll show you the results a bit later in graphical form. And at the back of what we're doing, we wanted to see how a member's experience will actually behave. And to do that, we needed a mortality model. A mortality model that we are confident with being that it captures systematic dependence. It also captures mortality improvements by the factors improving. So, and the model that we have chosen is a stochastic Gompertz-Macon model. And as you can see, this is a very, ubiquitous model that people have used. And the important thing is here that we're using a C factor, and the C factor is common across all ages. So which means that we're introducing a lot of dependence between lives. And also, this model takes the form of an exponential model. And when you calculate the survival probabilities, aggregate survival probabilities, it's a doubly exponential process, which means you get the extreme value impact in the tails, so in the old ages. And that's what we're trying to see. We're trying to see systematic dependence and the impact in the tails for old people. And this model doesn't very well. And the other good property of this model is that it gives analytical solutions to a lot of what we're doing. For example, survival probabilities or annuity factor calculations. So what we have done in our research is we have taken the model, we have simulated lives for a certain number of people aged 65, so that's the age at which they retire, and we ran it through the current proposed mechanism for group self-annuitization schemes. And the results are shown over here. So what we have done is we have done 5,000 simulations, and the three lines, so this line is the median payment that a retiree would receive if they're in this fund. This is the upper 95 percentile. This is the lower 5th percentile of people's incomes that they're going to receive. This simulation is done on 10 members aged 65 entering at time zero. And we have used the mortality model calibrated to Australian males data for mortality up to the year of 2007. And so what we can see is that under the current scheme for GSAs, 10 members, which is a relatively small number of people in the fund, their balance, the benefit payment they're going to receive is going to decline over time. And that is due to the systematic risk that comes through, but also we have this variability in people's payments. And the source of the variability comes from two different parts. One is the deviation of experience away from the population, and secondly is the underlying uncertainty in mortality forecasts. With 10 members, there is a very high chance that your pool mortality experience is different from your population mortality experience, and that is why we see a very big volatility going around. And in, up to the extreme, you see this lucky hump effect, which is for people who are lucky to survive when a lot of other people have died. You get this Tontine effect happening, that as people died earlier, they're going to distribute a lot of their contributed capital to people that survived in the form of mortality credits. And therefore, in the small chance that a lot of people died at the start, not many people survived, for the people that do survive, they're going to have a lot of payments, increasingly large payments at the end. So we've established that we have two problems. One is declining payments, and two is the volatility. Volatility increasing with age, and also the absolute volatility. We're trying to minimise the impact of both of them. So first of all, let's have a look at having large pools. So what do we do when we increase the pool size? So firstly, we have increasing pool size. So we increased the pool size from 10 people to 1,000 people. So if you have 1,000 people, and that's a sizable pool, what we saw was that the benefit payments became less volatile over time. Volatility still increases over time, but the extent to which it increases is reduced. So if you compare it to the previous graph, which is 10 people, you can see that the 1,000 people scenario has a lower volatility. And you can also see that the payments still decline, but the extent to which payments decline over time is much less than what we had before for the 10 people. And I guess the important thing to realise here is that not only does the fifth percentile decline, the median also decline, which means on the balance of probabilities, the impact of systematic mortality improvements is going to have an impact on the amount of money that people receive. And so we can see that with the existing scheme of things, despite the fact that you can increase the pool size, this product still doesn't really work that well. And the absolute volatility is still large, despite the fact that the lucky hump is pushed out, which means because of the larger pool, your mortality experience of the pool is going to be more or less in line with population mortality, you're still going to have the issue of absolute volatility.
So is that middle line median? Or?
Yeah, that's the median, sorry.
It's the which?
The middle line.
Yeah.
That's the median. See the grey lines? That's just the confidence intervals of our simulations. So there's the uncertainty coming in from our simulations, because whenever you do a simulation, there's uncertainty because you're simulating. And so this is the 95% confidence interval. And we try to make that confidence interval as narrow as possible because we're using a lot of simulations, so 5,000 simulations. But there's still this confidence interval. So one proposed solution of what we can do to minimise the impact of systematic mortality improvements on declining benefit payments and increasing volatility over time is what we call dynamic pooling. So we want to share mortality experience across generations. So we want to pool younger cohorts with older cohorts, and in such a way, making the pool, the size of the pool, more stable. And you want to share the mortality experience and volatility between young cohorts and old cohorts. And what we have done in this set of simulations is we have pooled 65-year-old people every 5 years into the pool. So, for example, you're 65 years now. In 5 years' time, you're 70, but then you get this additional bunch of 65-year-olds. So you have 1,000 65-year-olds coming through every 5 years. And that way, you're sharing, for an old individual in the pool, you're sharing your mortality experience with the younger cohorts. And the younger cohorts know that by sharing their mortality experience with the older people, when they get old, they're going to have younger people coming in that also share their mortality experience. And the benefit of that is that the size become much more manageable, much more stable, which means the volatility in people's payments is going to be reduced, especially for the old ages. The lucky hump disappears because the pool size becomes more stable. The mortality experience for the whole, as a whole, falls much more in line with population mortality. And the extent to which benefit payments decline, you see, it still declines for the median and also for the fifth percentile. The extent to which they decline is much less pronounced. But as what we've been seeing is that regardless of what you do, you can, yes, you can pull more people in. Yes, you can share mortality experience across generations. You're always going to have systematic risk or systematic mortality improvements impacting in the form of declining payments. And retirees don't want that. Retirees want stable benefit payments throughout their retirement. They don't want this declining business to go on. So what we have done is, you saw the formulas earlier for realizing expected future mortality rates and survival probabilities early on, and use the updated annuity factors to calculate people's benefit payments. So in effect, you're bringing this bit here downwards and you're pushing the old age benefits upwards. So you don't wait for the mortality experience to come through. You actually price it in before they come through, such that people's benefit payments are more stable. And the results are pretty impressive in that people's benefit payments no longer decline. As you can see for the median payments, the median payment that members receive in this GSA pool, it no longer declines because we have recognised expected future mortality improvements in the sharing process. But there are still problems. For example, for the fifth percentile in old ages, what we have said is aggregate mortality rates for old people in old ages tend to skew to the downside because of this doubly exponential extreme value distribution going on. And volatility, despite being reduced, is still there, absolute volatility. But we have solved one problem, is that on the balance of probabilities, people's benefit payments are stable. And that's the important thing. But it also calls for more solutions as to what we're going to do for people in the old ages in the 5% of the time. So solutions might include, say, reinsurance, or pooling different pools together and then securitize their longevity. But the important result from our research is that we can modify this product in such a way that on the balance of probabilities, people receive stable payments over time. And then lastly, what we know is that retirees not only seek longevity insurance, they also seek to have their income, their retirement income, to be indexed such that their purchasing power, the purchasing power of their savings, is preserved. And so what we have done is we have incorporated indexation into our model. And so that when you incorporate real interest rates into the modelling, for 1,000 members, 65-year-olds with dynamic pooling, with this improved annuity factor, this is what it looks like. So you can see that people's income increases over time in line with inflation. But then we're introducing uncertainty in another way. We're introducing uncertainty in investment rates, in inflation. And that's also something that future research might need to address. And there's also this interaction between investment risk and mortality risk. And if you compare the two graphs, this graph is the Cox-Ingersoll-Ross model incorporating volatility in inflation forecasts. And the previous graph is done using a fixed real interest rate. You can see that the volatility increases, especially for old ages, because you have volatility coming from two sources. The first source is mortality experience, and the second source is investment risk. And this is our summary of results of what we've done. So as you can see, every $100 if you increase the pool size, people's median payments that the extent to which they decline is going to be reduced. Also, if you introduce new cohorts dynamically through your pooling process, the decline in people's payments would also decline. And then you can also recognize future mortality improvements early on. And then you have a fairly stable median payment over time. And then with real interest rates, that's just incorporating inflation and indexation. So to conclude, what we have done is we have made group self-annuitization schemes a more viable and marketable product. And that's very important in the whole scheme of things for providing Australia with a retirement solution so that people can convert lump sum savings at the end of their working life to convert it into an income stream in their retirement. What we have done for GSA schemes is we have introduced various improvements in mechanisms that we can ensure that people's volatility, benefit payments volatility, doesn't get too large, especially in old ages, and we have made sure that the benefit payments people receive as part of the pool will remain relatively stable over time. And we have done it in various mechanisms. Firstly, we have introduced larger pools. So if you get a large pool size, the amount by which people's benefits decline is going to be less pronounced. And also, we're realising future improvements early on in human mortality, and we're also reducing volatility of payments by introducing young cohorts over time. But we have identified a problem that there is extreme value theory issues for old ages, and that calls for solutions such as reinsurance or hedging in financial markets, such as through securitization. And to put this all in perspective as to what a person might receive, say for a person earning $70,000 as salary over his working life for 40-something years, accumulating at 5%, at the end of the day, at the end when you retire, you're going to end up with about $760,000. If you chuck that amount into this pool, you're going to have an annual income of about $68,000. And that's, you know, that's a very good income considering that your working income was $70,000. And the other thing is, even with the problem that we have identified over here, in 5% of the time, even after we've done the large pool sizes, introducing young cohorts, and also preemptively realizing people's mortality rate increases, the fifth probability percentile is going to mean that over time, they're, for this individual earning $70,000 in his working life, receiving $68,000 as a starting value, over time he's probably going to receive $45,000 as a result of the decline because of improving mortality. And if you think about it, $45,000 is still a reasonable income to live on in today's dollars. And so, as a conclusion, this product is a very viable and good product, and we have done our work to improve it, to make it a marketable product. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Charles. I think we've got about 20 minutes before the break for afternoon tea. Can I just open the floor to any questions? It's one up the back. If you'd like to come down and use the microphone, please, and state your name.
Hi. Sorry. Hi, Mike Callan. Thanks very much for the presentation. Not only is it a marketable product, but these products are being sold around the world. Because I was involved in launching one in 2004. With this, so we had private research done, which we kept internally, so it's nice to see it's going to come out into the public domain a few years after. The issue around the old age, where you've got reinsurance or through the financial market, the solution that we took is that the shareholder would accept that risk. And so there was a... the payment could reduce slightly each and every year up until it... I can't quite remember the exact detail, but if it went down more than 10-20%, then the shareholder would kick in and keep the payments level from that date. So, but well done for publishing it.
Cool. Thank you. Isn't there still a problem? Because the whole point of having this is that the shareholders don't have to chip in capital. That's... Yeah, because if the shareholders are chipping in capital, that's then bringing it more in line with a traditional guaranteed life annuity, which then has the problem of supply.
We're talking about very old ages, and it's quite stable at old ages. The issue is not big. The big issue in annuities, something I saw it, this is from research 6-7 years ago now, so my mind might be losing it, was the fact that at 65, somebody may be alive for the next 40 years. There's a heck of a lot of variability in that period. But from 1895 onwards, there's a much shorter period. So whilst the length was much shorter, I mean, the economic capital requirements are heavily reduced.
Right.
Daniel Longdon, just to pick up on that point, so... waste probably a too strong a term, but I spent 6 months pricing one of these products that was launched in Australia. The solution at the tail was exactly that the shareholders took that risk from, I think, 85 or 90, so the pooling stopped at that point. The real challenge was in terms of marketability. You can design these structures, but I guess explaining them to consumers so they understand that risk that they're taking on and what the benefits are.
I guess in that sense, probably... the government has a role in making sure that, you know, people are enticed into buying these things, and also probably providing hedge solutions such as a longevity bond so that, you know, people can effectively manage the risk of systematic mortality.
Hi, Bridget Brown. So I'm not familiar with these products, so would you compare it? It's effectively like a traditional participating lifetime annuity, except that the payments can go down, which yep. releases capital and so on.
Yep.
Right, okay, I get it. Within well-defined rules, okay. Which means that you don't have that lack of, or that opaqueness around bonus declaration, which has caused issues for some of these products. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like a unitized group of profits rather than a traditional group of profits.
And the fund value is also preserved over time? So you're not going to pay out more than what you've collected?
David Lau, from Swiss Re. Have you considered that there might be a problem that, for example, the young cohort of entrants refuse to subsidize the older cohort? Or another problem is that there are not enough young cohorts to sort of make the population stable?
Yeah, that's an issue. And there's a selection issue there as well, as you've mentioned. Young people don't want to share with older cohorts. And the other problem is probably the younger cohorts are not there. But as long as there's a good pool out there, because our research is only based on 1,000 people in the pool, and we've shown that that's effective. It's not hard to find, you know, because for a major industry fund, we have forecasted to be something like 10,000 people, and a 1,000 people fund is okay.
If you look at all the cohorts entering at age 65. Quantified it, but if you look at the welfare gain from the reduction in volatility and the stability of the income, it's still in their interest to actually pull. But you've got to demonstrate that, obviously. In terms of welfare gains from the reduction and the reduction in volatility, it's actually improving sharing across generations, across cultures.
And also, the other problem is younger cohorts don't want to pull with older cohorts. And there's an alternative proposal out there by Sabin for a fair tontine, and he has made sure that the expected future gains for a young person is the same as the expected future gains for an old person in the pool. But what that created was it moved more towards traditional tontine, that young people are too better off. And there's a greater incentive for you to go out and shoot all of the old people. And also, as part of that proposal, fund balance is not being preserved. So,
I'm Richard Lyon. I'm very much in learning mode about all of this. So, very, very basic. The pictures you put up... help me in my understanding. I think what you were doing initially was 5% nominal return and showing nominal payments.
Yep.
And then you went to a 2.69% real return and showed real payments.
Yep.
And the lower return gave you the increasing picture, because those are increasing real payments. Nothing else has changed. But because you've reduced the interest rate that you've used... Okay, you're now talking real dollars instead of nominal dollars, yeah. But it's the reduction in the interest rate that has caused that upslope, not the change to real rates of itself, which starts to look and feel, for those of us that are old enough to remember, like the principles of net premium valuation. So if we're into with profits and all of that, if you use a low interest rate to value the future... You've stored up a lot of potential shock absorbance. That's what it feels like. But obviously I'm wrong, given the way that Mike's shaking his head.
Mike, do you want to respond? I think we're recording, so you need to
check.
No, right. Oh, sorry.
That's in nominal dollars, but with a real rate of interest. So in other words, payments are increasing with inflation. We take inflation into account.
So it's, a real
it's not
payment,
exactly
but
the
but
same
but
as what you're talking about.
Those are nominal payments.
Yeah, if you want to generate an increasing real stream, then you would do something like what you're talking about. In other words, the real interest rate is reduced when you share. That's equivalent to what you're saying, but what you're trying to achieve is an increasing stream, increasing with inflation. But similar concept but different objective. Yeah. You want to generate and inflation, an increase in strength, an increase with inflation.
But for the benefit of the it's probably not really a tape anymore. but the principle is still the same. I mean, you largely fixed the declining future payment problem by simply being realistic instead of optimistic about future inflation, future mortality. So if you got a bit pessimistic about future mortality and you got a bit pessimistic about future returns, you are then storing up a shock absorber which you can use for something. No. But that depends on your sharing systems and all of that, and tax and everything else. I appreciate that. I do love the idea that your sharing system is fixed and fair, therefore. But I think somebody else said it's very hard to explain, and I would love to see the explanation. The key facts in the PDS. You know.
We don't know anything about these things.
Just echoing a couple of Daniel's observations, these are devilishly difficult to communicate to advisors, let alone to mums and dads out there. I did have one observation and a question. I guess my question first. You mentioned that there was a piece of work around, I'm not sure whether it was something that's been launched or whether it's academic research, which was some around 2005, 2006, talking about why anti-selection wasn't actually a problem. Yep. I'd be interested in a minute in hearing a little bit more about that, because certainly one of the big issues, having been involved in some of these, is been very much around that. The other observation I'd make is that, you know, this is a variation on a number of themes that are out there. I think the first thing I'd make is no one in their right mind in the real world in the annuity market would do anything other than be anticipating future mortality improvements in whether, regardless of who's actually bearing that risk. So I guess I was a little bit surprised to see that as sort of third or fourth in the pecking order of the changes that you'd make. I'd put it as number one, probably even put it in the base, frankly. But the other observation I'd make is there are a raft. I mean, I've seen them, I've developed a number of them. I'm aware of people who developed specifically the sort of product that you're describing. There are a raft of products out there that combine, mix and match investment risk, sort of whether it's self-insured or whether it's guaranteed or pooled, and longevity risk, whether it's self-insured or, well, for this purpose, whether it's pooled or whether it's underwritten. I mean, there are investment-linked annuities out there. There are with-profits annuities, more of a trad type. There are unitized with-profits annuities. There are, well, I term these annuitized funds. There's a couple of variations, certainly I'm aware of, in the UK. It's been tried in Australia and a few years ago and struggled to get traction with mums and dads. I think from that point of view, it's useful to have some of the maths behind what might have been a little bit quicker and dirtier on the part of some that might have brought some of these to market. But I just want to draw an analogy with investment-linked annuities, because you can do a lot of things with these things, and perhaps getting to Richard's question earlier. I mean, the classic with investment-linked annuities was to say to the purchaser, you choose what you want in terms of annuity profile. You can have those are products where the provider is underwriting the longevity risk, so it's a slightly different issue. But you could still package the products to say you can choose a level of units that are being cashed. I mean, the value was actually linked to the value of the underlying unit fund, but that's detail. Or you could use different discount rates, coming back to your point, Richard, to actually build into your profile of annuities a rising annuity over time, and with profits annuities do exactly the same thing. So I mean, there are a lot of mechanics out there, but the observation I'd make is there's lots of weird and wonderful, most particularly products from an actuarial point of view, but aside from lifetime annuities, they've all really struggled to sell. And with profits annuities didn't do too badly for a while until Equitable Life particularly fell over, and then to my understanding, the bottom's kind of fallen out of that market. Investment-linked annuities have been around for over 20 years. I worked on developing one of those. They just don't sell. They're great products, but I'm not sure anyone's particularly keen on offering them now that they really understand the longevity risks involved. But even when they were being offered willingly, there weren't many takers. So I think there's a real challenge on the communicating these products to consumers and advisors and getting anything like a meaningful take-up. But so that was a bit of a long ramble, but I'd be very keen to hear your point on adverse selection.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. It's going to be hard to sell, because if you look at why people don't buy traditional annuities, you know, there are many factors. People, you know, people don't understand. People want to leave money for their kids. People want to do this. People want to do that. And there's this systematic mortality risk. So people don't want to buy this. And it's going to be a major challenge, I think, for governments to encourage people to, either through financial incentives or tax incentives, or, you know, issuing longevity bonds or whatever out there. You mentioned adverse selection, and the paper by Valdez, Pigott and Wang, all they did was they took the traditional utility function approach developed earlier for insurance, for general annuities, and then applied the framework to group self-annuitization schemes. And what they have shown is that adverse selection exists both in a group self-annuitization and in a guaranteed life annuity. But the extent to which people adversely select against the group self-annuitization is less than the extent to which people adversely select against the traditional lifetime annuity.
Well, I took it that the reason why adverse selection would be lower was because the perceived value was higher. The perceived opportunity to benefit would be higher. And one question that I've... Pardon? Well, that's one question that I've got, is how does that starting payment compare with the annuity that you would get, you know, with the same ignoring of expenses and so on, from a life office on a guaranteed flat basis? 20% higher. 20% higher. Well, so therefore...
Yeah, yeah, because you haven't...
So the more you perceive that coming into this you're going to get value, the less the adverse selection. That just makes sense. So that, yeah. Then the next sort of things you can see happening are to fix even that part of the adverse selection. You start saying, well, part of what you've put in can be left as a bequest or whatever, which is next time's paper, I imagine.
Yeah. and also made a comment on investment, linking this with investment or even building in investment or discount rates. We don't want to do that because we don't want to give people a false sense of expectation, but it can be done. I'll show you how it can be done. See, in this thing over here, so you know how we can express the current benefit payment as a function of previous year's payment, and how it's weighted according to mortality experience. We can also have a weighting factor in here for the delta, which is essentially your investment rate. And we have excluded that analysis from our research because we were only trying to do the mortality side of things. But you can try the investment side of things by combining that in here as well. So, which means that you can actually link investment experience with the amount of money that people receive, which means that, you know, people's benefit payments can increase or decrease based on the investment experience. And then you can do hedges to make it more stable as well.
Well, we possibly have time for one more question. My job has been made a lot easier by a very vigorous discussion, so I thank everyone for that. But thanks. Last one.
Just make a very brief comment. Congratulations on your paper, Chair. I must confess I was part of peer reviewing it, so I've got a bit of a bias there. But I think from comments from overseas annuity markets, which have been very interesting to have here in the discussion, the situation we have in Australia is we have a lot of people responsible for lumps of money for people facing retirement, and those organisations have no capital to start off their own annuity program. And this is a wonderful concept to start off part annuitisation with for those mutual organisations who have no capital. And obviously it's a very first step with, as Charles mentioned, other belts and braces that can be put around it even as an initial process. I went to the Treasury modelling today on the wide expanse of outcomes that are possible on pure investment, stochastic simulations. And I think what you need to do next is show how much better the boundaries are on this process compared to what people are currently facing now on a purely asset investment model. Thanks.
Any response? No? Okay. Wasn't sure there. Well, it remains for me to do two things. One is to remind you to please give your feedback forms, and although I didn't tell Richard in time, please don't fold them in half. They're better received unfolded, apparently. And secondly, to thank Chao very much for the excellent paper.